This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. I'm Macca. My co-host is Madeline Swain. Our next guest is Associate Professor from Monash Uni, Darsh Aitken. And Darsh has done, or is going to talk to us about, a study that women from diverse backgrounds still face leadership barriers. Good morning, Darsh. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning, Macca and Madeline. How are you?
We're good. We're good. And tell us about this study. What was it about, and what did it find?
So basically what happened is all the authors of the study come from diverse backgrounds, and we were having a chat, and we work in health and research and science about how hard it is for us as women coming from cultural backgrounds to be leaders or be recognised as leaders. And so we wanted to speak to women leaders who had cultural diverse backgrounds in other sectors to kind of see, well, what's happening in those areas. And so we were fortunate to be able to speak to some very prominent female leaders about their experiences of leadership and to find out, you know, what was working, what wasn't working, and what they thought better would look like.
So basically, you know, it came to, I suppose, you know, a finding or a conclusion that there are a lot of barriers. You know, some of them seen, some of them unseen. Can you give us a feel for what they are?
Well, I guess, you know, a lot of gains have been made in terms of women's representation in the workforce and women in leadership generally. But when we start to look at the concept of intersectionality, so that is, you know, multiple identities that we as all humans hold, and particularly if you're coming from a cultural background, migrant background, that can be a lot harder to then gain recognition in leadership. We're not necessarily always seen, and that was a very clear message that came from this research, as people who would be leaders, because the dominating view of what a leader is doesn't look like us and sometimes doesn't talk like us, behave like us, and so it can be very difficult to navigate those leadership opportunities or even see ourselves in those positions.
And Darsh, hi, thanks for being here today.
Hi.
Does the report come up with any solutions or suggestions for how to go forward?
Well, it came up with a number of different recommendations, of which one is, you know, to really take a bit more of a holistic look at who we are in the workplace, and to understand that, yes, there's gender and sexuality and disability and family and all sorts of cultural elements that are going to play into how people are in the workplace, and we need to be able to support people. I think one of the most interesting things that came out, which was really from one of our interviewees, Mariam Visaday, who really said, you know, when we are looking to promote diversity and equity and inclusion of women in leadership, this cannot be done just by experts. We really need people with lived experience around the table, because they're the ones who really have lived the problem and can identify what the solutions are going forward. And I guess the other recommendation is there's sometimes a tension in terms of, okay, well, if you guys are then allowed to be leaders, or we're promoting you as leaders, then what does that mean for me? And really to seek allyship for people who are traditionally leaders, to say, hey, give us room, but also promote us, recognise us, encourage us, because sometimes we might not necessarily see that in of ourselves. So having that allyship can be incredibly important going forward.
Can I just mention that, related but sort of slightly outside of this, the website that I manage and edit is Arts Hub, and we've been running this project recently called the Amplify Collective to provide a platform for unrepresented voices and voices from First Nations writers and people of colour and gay and lesbian voices, rainbow voices, senior writers, people with a disability, and regional and all over the country. And this program, it's a win-win, because not only are these voices being heard and supported, but it does really well for us. You know, our numbers are up because people want to hear from diverse voices and leaders. So it actually benefits everybody.
100%. And I think that is what we really need to be focusing on, is that we do need diversity of experience. We need diversity of voices to really be able to kind of represent society, but also to make society better. And if we think about our workplaces, if we only have leaders that are coming from one lens, they're going to lead from that lens and when potentially missing out. So I do think there's a lot of benefits. And when you do have culturally and linguistically diverse women, people from First Nations, people from lots of different backgrounds represented in leadership, you will have people want to work for your organisations because they can see themselves there, as opposed to potentially not recognising themselves and thinking they might not have a pathway to leadership in that organisation.
Absolutely.
Because I think one of the, you know, when we talk about, you know, women from diverse backgrounds, can you give us a bit of a feel for, you know, how would you categorise a diverse background? I mean, I have my own idea. Madeline would have hers. Listeners would have theirs. In terms of the study, can you give us a bit of a feel for that?
That's a really good question. And I wouldn't necessarily want to kind of say, oh, you're not from a diverse background if you look and feel or think a particular way. But I think one of the things our study really focused on, and a few of the people we interviewed did call out, is that particularly diversity when you look physically different or you sound physically different can be a real challenge to overcome. So, you know, I'm from a Sri Lankan background. I came to Australia when I was 3, which means I speak not with a Sri Lankan accent. And I know that that has actually been a privilege in my work because that hasn't held me back, the fact that I can speak the same as the general population. And I've had people say to me, oh, wow, you speak English so well. And I'm like, yes, I do. And other people then who come from a migrant background say, well, how do I get to where you are? And I was like, I've been here since I was 3. You know, this was the accent I grew up around. Those conversations are heartbreaking. So I think diversity, when you are so obviously different, can be a challenge to navigate sometimes some of these systems and infrastructure where recognised as being able to have a voice or being able to have a position of leadership.
We've seen this this sort of, I suppose, preconceived ideas play out a lot. Been a lot of surveys done and a lot of data around even things, you know, as basic as a surname. When people are applying for a job, then, you know, when people, and I don't know, people still do put a picture with their resume, or, you know, then when they're in the actual interview. So the way they speak, the way they look, the way their name is spelt, and then add into that gender, there are huge there are huge barriers for people that, you know, in not just getting employment, but in accessing all sorts of other services, aren't there? I mean, how do we do this better?
And you're exactly right. So there's been massive studies where people have basically Anglo-Saxon people's names on job applications to see if they got to the interview stage, and have shown that they were more likely to if they did have an Anglo-Saxon name versus a cultural name. And I know for myself, I'm married and my surname, I did take my husband's surname, is a white surname. It throws people off. Like, they don't know who to expect if they haven't met me in person. And they often don't know if my first name is female or male. So it's a very kind of interesting thing to try and navigate. But you're exactly right. It does, it can stop people just from the paper from gaining access into employment, into services. And I do think society is getting better, but the only way we can keep getting better is to keep having these conversations and raising awareness about it, because I don't think for the most part it's a malicious thing. I think people have assumptions. I think they have ideas about, you know, who people are, but we are, particularly in Melbourne, a very multicultural society, and it is very common to see people of all different nationalities around you. And so to be able to say, oh, that's a name I know, I recognise, that it's not a big deal.
Because I think, you know, a lot of organisations, both, you know, in the community sector, in the not-for-profit sector, in the business sector, actually have, you know, where people, you know, they use, if there's a selection panel, you know, to decide who's going to go ahead to interview, that they actually use blind resumes, in effect, that don't indicate the gender, that don't have a name, that really only talk about, you know, the experience and addressing the, you know, the skills criteria. I like that idea because you don't, you know, all of us have some sort of preconceived ideas about all sorts of things. So as much as we try to work with that and, you know, to remedy, you know, to not do that, when you actually look at a candidate and you go, oh, well, here's the experience, you know, what gender they are, what their name is, you know, isn't relevant to whether or not they get an interview.
Yes, but then also what happens when they do show up to the interview and they might have an accent or, you know, like that can sometimes throw people. So I do think that's a really good, you know, strategy to help. But I also think the other side of that strategy is, you know, the research that shows that, okay, if men see selection criteria and they can, you know, address 5 out of 10, they'll put an application in, whereas in for a woman, they need to address 10 out of 10. It's for a culturally and linguistically diverse person, that's even worse. Like, it's kind of like, I've got to do 10 out of 10, but, like, show that I'm exceeding expectations in all these other things that they may not have asked for because there might be a perception that I'm not going to be good enough. Like, that is a narrative that people are going to be carrying. So even putting the applications in, I think there's big barriers that people need to overcome. And I do think, you know, starting early, starting in the education sector to kind of try and break down some of those barriers and then to kind of say, you know, we are all equal. I remember when I was in primary school, like I've been here, as I said, since I was 3, I was the only person of colour in my primary school for a very long time.
Oh, wow.
And so... and that was a primary school of 300 kids. And I remember in grade 6, everyone else was told in the yearbook, oh, they're going to be a prime minister. They're going to be, you know, an actress and they're going to, you know, have all these amazing roles. And I was told I was going to be the librarian. And so, you know, like you grow up with these narratives because people aren't expecting more of you. And I think it's changing. We have got some incredible leaders now. And even one of the authors, Michelle Anata Raja, is the first Labor federal member for Higgins, which is astounding, but people didn't think she was going to succeed in that. And that, you know, I'm just so proud of her and the representation that she's now showing for women of colour in federal parliament.
I think you're right. I think it is changing a bit. I've worked in two places recently where people were clearly employed on their skills. So they were both beautifully diverse places. And the first place had a lot of other issues, but that certainly wasn't one of them. And but it's a conversation that just keeps needing to be repeated. And programs like the one that I was talking about at Amplify Collective, it's taught me so much. And the more platforms that are given, and the more the conversation is continued, the better it'll get, I think.
Yeah,
100%.
Look, we're out of time, Dash. I want to thank you. You know, for giving up some of your Saturday to talk to us. If people would like to have a look at this study, is it available online for them to see the outcomes?
It's available, freely available online. If you type in BMJ leader and no one can actually see us in positions of power, it will come up on Google.
Okie doke. Great. Look, thank you so much. Thanks for your work. And again, thanks for your time on a Saturday. I hope the rest of the weekend is good for you.
Great. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thanks, Dash.
Our pleasure. That was Dash Ayton from Monash Uni. We're speaking about a study where women from diverse backgrounds still face leadership barriers. A really interesting discussion, Madeline. We're going to go to a couple of messages and then the news. You're on Saturday Magazine. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.